Welcome back to another episode of Miss Defy, God's Saltiest Women. I'm Pastor Rachel.
I'm Gail Miller.
And we are back for another episode in which we get to talk about one of the world's salty, faithful women and what they were able to do in the world around her. So,
and what do we have this time around, Miss Pastor Rachel?
So today, we have one of my heroes.
Okay,
I first read her biography in 2013. Her autobiography. Her autobiography. There we go.
Yeah.
And
We're getting there.
And she just blew my mind in terms of her prophetic imagination and just believing in herself and believing in her community and saying, we can do this.
You pulled that word from thesaurus. Prophetic.
Prophetic imagination.
That is...
I pulled it from, this is so a tangent, but I pulled it from the guy who wrote our Lenten devotional. His name's Walter Brueggemann, and he wrote a book called Prophetic Imagination. So I borrowed from Mr. Brueggemann.
Okay. And what does that mean? Because I'm smart, but I'm not that smart.
No, it's okay. It's totally okay. So prophetic imagination is the idea of, like, we have imagination, right? We've got this idea of, like, what could be everything from sci-fi to fantasy to our lives to
overall fiction,
right? The ways that our brains can imagine things. Prophetic imagination is kind of the call we hear from God to imagine a different, better world in front of us. So like living into God's hope and dreams for the world,
right?
Even when the world around you is saying, I don't think so. Because if you just stay in the way, the status quo, and just keep things the way they are, that's not imaginative. That's just
boring.
That's right. That's passive.
Yeah.
Prophetic imagination is saying, I can see something better and I want to work towards it. So, this woman who did all this prophetic imagining and protesting and incredible actions, her name is Lema Bowie. And Lema Bowie was active in peace protests in Liberia. So she was born in February of 1972 in central Liberia, and when she was 17 years old, the first civil war in Liberia breaks out. And it starts over a decade of violence. It's this whole civil war. It ends, there's like a little bit of peace, but not really, and then a second one breaks out. And so the history of all that is its own story. Of the civil wars and why they started and why another one came up and all these things. But she talks about in her autobiography about how the first civil war really forced her to grow up. As a 17-year-old, she said they grew up pretty poor, but then she and her dad and her mom and all sorts of folks are starting to get like a foot up. So her dad gets a job and her mom is able to start working too, and then she goes to school and she graduates high school.
Well, they're on a bit of a high swing.
2 days after she graduates high school is when the Civil War breaks out. And she immediately is thrown into, like, having to take care of her younger siblings, having to take care of her family, pulling in siblings and family members who have been internally displaced within Liberia, who have lost their homes, who have been attacked by soldiers. So she's, like, trying to hold her family together.
Right.
Side note, this these two wars, this over a decade of violence, ends up costing the lives of a tenth of the people of Liberia.
Wow.
Which for the U.S. would be like if the entire state of California was murdered.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was trying to do this, I was trying to do like some math to get more states in and stuff to like make it bigger, but it's basically the whole California.
California's pretty big.
We're talking Bay Area, LA, San Diego, all those big metro areas, and then everything else in between.
Yeah.
So, huge hit. And so it's a decade of extreme violence. So after the first civil war, Lema starts really feeling this call to serving and working with people who've been traumatized by that violence. So she starts working towards a social work degree and starts working specifically with ex-child soldiers who have been forcibly recruited.
There were child soldiers?
So Charles Taylor is the name of the sitting president in the midst of all of this. And he has been described as one of the most, if not most violent warlords in modern history.
Oh, wow.
Because of how many people he personally killed and how many people he had killed on his orders. This tenth of the population is mostly killed because of his army.
Right.
And so his army is also made up of these child soldiers who are kidnapped, who are forced into this, basically it's enslavement, but mm-hmm. incredibly horrific and violent enslavement. They're often drugged to the point where they need their next fix from their battalion commanders, so they can't leave because they're now hooked on drugs. Mm-hmm. They're sometimes forced to kill their parents as part of this. It's awful. It's awful.
Oh my God.
And just heart-wrenching to even imagine. I can't even fathom
living. Yeah, killing your parents.
Right. Right.
As a child.
Awful.
Oh,
awful.
My God.
So Charles Taylor is the guy who's in charge of all of this. Mm-hmm. And so Lima Bowie is coming out of this first Civil War and seeing this incredible impact on her community and wants to help. And so she's working with these ex-children soldiers mm-hmm. And helping them do as much as she can to rehabilitate them into civilian life.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's not an easy feat.
Not at all. So then the Second Civil War starts. And she continues some of that work, but she ends up working in another office and doing some different work and kind of bouncing around. Mm-hmm. And she ends up having to send her children to live with her sister in Ghana, I believe, as part of, you'll be safer there in a refugee camp than you will be here in this country, which is wild to think about.
Yeah.
So she sends them off. So she's lonely. She's missing them. She's a single parent. She's really, basically just pouring herself into her work to try and comfort herself a little bit.
And what happened to her counterpart? Were they killed? Did they just leave?
So her first husband, she has two children with him, and then through her work with these ex-children soldiers and through her work with other people who have been traumatized, she comes to the realization that she's actually a survivor of trauma mm-hmm. based in this relationship. And so she ends up leaving him with her two children. So that she can, move on and try and heal from this trauma, because she knows that this is an unhealthy and toxic relationship. Mm. And then at some point, and I forgive me, Lema, if you're listening, oh my God, that would be incredible, but at some point she remarries and has another partner, but I believe that's later on in mm-hmm. life that she has a second husband. Anyway, so she's single parent in this office job, working, still doing really important work, but she's just exhausted. So she falls asleep at the office one night and she has this dream that she hears the voice of God saying, I want to get these words right. Okay. The voice she hears says, get the women up and pray for peace. And so she wakes up mm-hmm. and she's like, that was...
What women?
Yeah, right. What women? Who? How are we supposed to do that? That was incredible.
Yeah.
So she goes to her boss, who happens to be a pastor. And she tells him, she says, hey, I think I have this message for you, because I don't think it was meant for me. And she says, I've been hearing this in podcasts. I think she says this in her book, too. But she says, I know it's not for me because I'm a heavy drinker and I am living in quote-unquote sin, because she was living with a different partner at that time and they weren't married. Mm-hmm. So she's like, I'm pretty sure God's not going to use me because, I'm imperfect.
The mail got to the wrong person.
Yeah, exactly.
That sent her the wrong address.
It got forwarded to me, but I'm returning it to you.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So her pastor boss basically says, and I love these words, he tells her the dream bearer must be the dream carrier. And that if you were to give your dream away to somebody else, you wouldn't recognize it when you see it again. Which, so she's just like...
The last part.
Yeah.
That's...
Yeah.
Really good.
Really, really
Props
good.
Props to the pastor.
Right? And so he basically is like, this is your call from God. You need to listen. And so, and also, I keep thinking of all of these stories in the Bible that this sounds so much like when God says, follow me, and the person hearing it is like, you mean this person, right? And then God's like, no, I mean you.
Yeah.
So she decides to follow, but she decides she has to start somewhere. So she starts small. She starts with her community. So she starts with 7 women in her community and 10 USD. Mm-hmm. This grows into thousands of women over the course of the years, over a few years. Into thousands of women who are all actively praying
Okay.
to end the conflict.
I was just going to say, wait, what's their project?
What are they doing? Yeah. So they stage sit-ins at markets. They dress all in white. That's their, like, marker. And so there's just all of a sudden across Liberia, there are these thousands of women praying in markets, praying on the street corners, praying mm-hmm. in their homes, praying in groups. So you just see women dressed all in white all over the place.
Just praying everywhere. Just
praying everywhere.
It's like snow fell. Exactly. But they're all, like, praying to the Lord.
Exactly. And Lema realizes really pretty early on that this is work that is cross-religious. It's not just or pan-religious. It's not just... So she identifies very strongly as Christian. In fact, she's Lutheran, which is very cool.
Nice.
And she went... I think she went through a Lutheran church to get her social work degree or something. Somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's spoken at ELC at conferences and things. But anyways, so she realizes that this isn't just a Christian problem. But this is a human problem.
Right.
And so she starts... She and her group... start reaching out to Muslim communities. And so now they have Muslim women along with them mm-hmm. who are praying alongside them. And so it's this, like,
huge,
like, group of people coming together and saying, yeah. because we are created to be different, we have to do this. And something I forgot to say earlier is part of the reason that Lema starts really believing that this work needs to be taken on by women is because in her work with the ex-children soldiers, in her own trauma, in the trauma of her whole country, she's realizing over time that it's really the moms, the grandmothers, the sisters, the wives, the daughters mm-hmm. who are being, who are left behind when the men go to war, but then are also the victims of soldiers showing up and murdering, raping,
mm-hmm.
all horrible things.
Right, yeah.
And that they should have a say in how peace is achieved.
And
how to move forward. So they have all of these sit-ins, they stage all these prayer-ins. They get all the way up to, like, the Houses of Parliament in Liberia
mm.
and end up causing all this, like, peaceful havoc that just really messes with the brains of the
I
people
really
in charge.
I really love the contradictory phrasing here.
Yes.
I feel yes. It's definitely serving this episode
well. Absolutely. So they do all these nonviolent protesting, including showing up really early so that all of the mostly men members of parliament don't have parking spots, so they have to park really far away. They just, like, sit in their parking spots and don't let them park. So, like,
yay!
Just to aggravate them.
We love all these
things. We love it.
Yeah.
We love it. So they do all these things to try and upset. And so eventually the whole community is invited in to talk to the president, which is, like, their first
big win. That's a
big
deal.
And this is the same president who's this warlord.
Right.
Charles Taylor.
The evil one.
Exactly. Correct. So, they go onto this, and the whole time, Lema is saying, you know, it's not about me, it's about these people that we're representing, it's about women, it's about children, it's mm-hmm. about our people that we're representing.
Right.
So at one point, Charles Taylor says, okay, you can have 10 people in. And she says, no, I'm bringing all of them. And wants to bring, there's like 2,500 people there, or something, women there.
Yeah.
So she wants to bring all 2,000 of them into his office. And they're not going to fit. But so she mm-hmm. writes this letter, she pens this letter, and she or this talk. And she addresses the only sitting female politician in the cabinet at that time. I think she was like the minister of... I don't know what she was the minister of, so I don't want to misspeak, but
mm-hmm.
she was the only sitting female politician on the cabinet or the
right.
or the organizing body. And so she's addressing it, Lema is addressing it to her, but is looking at the president the whole time as if to say, like, hey, I'm appealing to you as a woman, but really he's the one we're going after.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want this to end. So nothing really immediately comes from that, but it's a big win that they got in front of him at all.
Yeah.
So they continue these sit-ins.
And we're able to be so, like, petty to Parliament in
right.
the first place.
Right.
Like,
totally.
I'm sure, like, if women organizations tried to do that now with, like, our White House, they would immediately get kicked out.
Right. It's fascinating how well and smart they were able to work it so that didn't happen. So there was a lot of, like, thinking on the organizer's part. It was just really, really well executed.
Yeah.
So then eventually the UN is starting to get involved. There's all these, like, a bunch of media is finally getting in. And so eventually there's enough pressure from the rest of the world the Liberia is finally like, okay, we'll sit down and we'll have some peace talks. Mm-hmm. So at these peace talks, the current sitting president and all of his, you know, cronies aren't really playing nice. They're just kind of like, well, we'll just leave early. We're really not here to work hard. We're not really here to make peace. They're really not there with the best intentions.
Oh.
So she gets a whole group of people together, and they show up. So these peace talks are happening in Ghana. So she gets all these women together, and they show up, and they stage a sit-in, and basically write a hostage note and tell the peace talkers that we're holding you hostage until you come to an agreement and that peace is reached. And so then the guards show up. They're like, well, we got to get these women out of here, because they're, like, linking arm to arm. They're not, they didn't let them leave for food. They didn't let them leave for water. Like, you sit at the table.
You are here until something happens, even if that means it's, like, a weekend.
100%. It feels like every time I read this fact over or, like, picture this in my mind, it feels like they put these massive world leaders in timeout. They're just like,
yeah,
you
that's
cannot
such a great,
play nice.
Yeah.
Sit down.
I'm moving your clip down to the red dot.
Exactly.
That's a phone call home.
Exactly. Like, I need you to figure this out.
Yeah.
You're stuck in the corner until you can figure it out. You know?
Exactly.
So anyway, so at one point, and this is one of my favorite stories, one of the guards come to start removing the women, and mm-hmm. Lema says, if you start removing me, I'll start removing my clothing.
Oh.
A really important backstory, context thing to know about all this, is that in Liberian society, if a man sees a woman who's not his wife undressed, it, like, is a massive curse upon him. Mm. It's, like, a disrespect on another level. It is it's a dishonoring in an extreme way.
Okay.
So because she starts making moves to actually disrobe in front of this guy, they all panic. The men panic and basically
they
leave.
Lid.
They
yeah.
leave. They're like, I can't deal with these women. I just have to go. So they don't get violent. They don't get, they just are literally, their brains are so, like, misfiring. They're just, like, the men are just, like, I can't handle this.
Oh, I said ginormous in, like, in terms
talking
to
about
the
women.
Women.
Right.
Yeah, not the,
right.
not the guys.
So the guys, the guards are just, they can't handle it, so they walk away. So now there are no longer any guards reinforcing it. The women force the men at the table to finish the peace talks, and peace is achieved. So the war ends in 2003.
Oh, wow. That's a lot more recent than I thought.
Yeah. So the decade of violence. Yeah. So all of our other saints have been a lot older.
Right.
Like, a
yeah.
lot more
At
further.
Least, like, 400 years old.
Correct. So the Liberian Civil War, the first one, starts in 1989, and then the second one ends in 2003. So
wow.
over a decade of violence, but also yeah. very recent. So then, in 2006, one of Lema Bowie's co-conspirators, her name is Ellen Sirleaf, she becomes the first democratically elected female head of state in African modern history. So, like, the entire continent.
And just
she's the first.
For the listeners at home, if you need to, like, if you need something to process, like, just how revolutionary that is, I was born in 2007. Like, I'm almost 16 years old. And, like, that's just crazy that it was that recent.
The year before you were born.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's the sitting president from 2006 until 2018. So she's there
that's
for a while.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like,
what?
12 years.
Yeah.
And there's some conflict about how she then lives into it, but I don't want to get into that because I just want to celebrate her as the first. And then mm-hmm. she lives into it as an imperfect human like we all are, but she's
right.
the first. So then in 2011, mm-hmm. there are three women who receive the Nobel Peace Prize. One of them is a woman by the name of Tawakkul Karman, and I don't know her story as well as I should. So listeners, let's research her together. One of them is Ellen Sirleaf, and one of them is Lema Bowie. So
Yay!
She receives the Nobel. She's one of three women who receives the Nobel Peace Prize in 2011. And she starts the Bowie Foundation, which is focused on making sure that women and girls are getting educated, are getting the leg up that they deserve, are, you know, healing from all this trauma.
Yeah.
And she goes on, like, I don't know how many. So she writes her autobiography, I think it was in 2011 also. I think it was in part in response to the Nobel Peace Prize nomination. Don't quote me on that. But, so she writes her autobiography, so she's, like, now world-renowned as being sort of this...
figurehead
pioneer.
Of peace.
Yeah. Pioneer of female involvement in peace and ending of violence across the African continent. So it's from their movement that peace sort of spreads and women become more involved all over the world. It just spreads in a really, really beautiful, incredible way. So she is now mom to 8, I believe. 8 kiddos. Okay. And continues to do the work of healing and speaking out and being just a really incredible human.
Yeah, she's mystifying.
She's mystifying all over the place. All over the place.
All over the place.
And she talks at length about, and part of the reason I wanted to bring her up was, and to focus on her, is that she talks at length about the importance of faith and how she says that, she thinks that, one of my favorite quotes of hers is that she thinks that anger is really important, that it's a really, really good fuel, but that hate is really cancerous, and that hate is what anger can turn into if you let it. That if you just are ruled by your anger all the time and let it get the best of you, it can turn into hate, and that's really the poisonous part. And she's been known to say that during the war she was full of hate for the people who let this happen, full of hate for, you know, the people in charge, and then has slowly come to her own sense of peace primarily through her faith and primarily through, you know, talking about her trauma. And she said, she, I was listening to a podcast recently, and she was talking about how trauma feels like a very physical wound, and that we all have the scars from it. And that if you just sort of let it scab over without making sure it's healthy underneath, it festers and it just keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And she said that's what hate does. And so what you have to do is you have to make sure the wounds are clean, that the you know, it's taken care of properly, that you're healing and not just scabbing over. But that you'll never be free of the scars. You just learn to make your peace with the scars. And make your peace with all that.
I like that quote. I think it's a good one.
Yeah, she's pretty phenomenal. So that's Leva Bowie!
Oh my gosh!
She's phenomenal. I'm trying... I know I have her autobiography here. Hold on, let me grab it.
Okay, because I want to...
I don't want to misremember the title.
You want to celebrate her properly.
Exactly.
Uh-oh.
Well, it's not currently on the top of my mess of my desk, so it's somewhere else, but it's phenomenal. I would highly recommend our listeners go look it up. For anyone trying to find her, her last name is actually spelled with a G, so it's Layma, L-A-Y-M-E-H-G-B-O-W-E-E.
I see.
Layma Bowie. Yeah, just... incredible.
Do you want to do your appreciation?
Oh my gosh,
first?
We have to do the appreciation parts. I'm like, let me just keep talking about her. No, okay.
Do you want to go first or do you want me to?
I think you should go first. Go for it.
Okay. There's multiple things that I really appreciate about this woman, but I feel like when you brought most of them up, I was like, I appreciate about that about her in the moment. The one that I really sticks with me, but I didn't say anything about it in the moment is how she kind of realized this isn't, like, a religious issue, it's a human issue. We need to get everyone from, not every walk of life, but, like, every belief to help better the world. Because I feel like religion right now is very, like, exclusive. Like, my religion is the religion that should be worshipped everywhere. And so the idea of, like, you know, coming together and accepting each other's faiths and beliefs and like the way we view the world as different, but still, like, we have this end goal of, like, we want the world to be a better place for us, for our children, for everyone, basically. That's pretty forward thinking, like, even now. And that is something that I, like, it can take a lot for someone to come to that conclusion. So totally. I really appreciate that about her.
Yeah. It goes back to the stuff I was saying at the very beginning about prophetic imagination. If mm-hmm. we are focused on, you know, my way or the highway, if we're focused on right. saying you have to conform in order to be part of the in crowd, mm-hmm. we lose sight of
diversity.
We lose sight of diversity. We lose sight of who God has created each individual to be, to authentically be. Mm-hmm. We lose sight of so much, but we also lose sight of the path that God has placed in front of us. And I think that's what prophetic imagination is to me, is opening ourselves, our eyes, our hearts, our spirits, our communities, our buildings, ourselves mm-hmm. to
the path unknown, forward.
The path forward, and saying, you know, this is the way it's always been. It's really important that we start thinking different. So yeah. in Lema's example, it's been really violent for a long time. We need to start thinking different. We need to start imagining different.
Yeah.
For the sake of our children, for the sake of our country. And hers is so grounded in, because God created us to be mm-hmm. fully peaceful, yeah. sacred beings.
He did not design us for war.
Exactly. Exactly. And that hate is really what's destroying us.
Yeah, that's a really good quote.
Yeah, yeah.
If it wasn't so long, I'd maybe make it my senior quote.
Yeah, we can work on it.
We'll scratch it down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was all paraphrased, so I'm sure we can find something that she said that's much more succinct and to the point. But
yeah,
I'm really grateful to her for that, for her her ability to not only cast a vision but then stick to it. Mm-hmm. I love visioning. I love saying, oh, that sounds really cool. We should go do that. Let's, like, go dream something better.
Do you like vision boards? Do you make vision boards?
I've never actually gotten into vision boards, but I love, like, journaling. I love, I do love a good Pinterest board. So, yes. You know, like, there are the little things, but I love the idea of, like, casting a vision out there. It's a lot harder for me to stick to it.
Right.
To get there.
See it through.
So, in the same way that, like, it'd be really cool to one day run a marathon.
Yeah.
It's really hard for me to train to actually finish a marathon.
It'd be really nice to, like, one day go to a different country, but you got to save up for all the expenses, you got to know how to speak the language, right. et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So for Lema to say, it would be really nice for us to not be at war anymore, and then to actually see it through, and to say, I'm going to mm-hmm. put my life, my dignity, mm-hmm. my career, my mm-hmm. everything on the line, because that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
It just is so inspirational. It's just phenomenal. She's a phenomenal woman.
She's a good person to look up to, definitely. Absolutely.
That's why she's one of my heroes. She's amazing.
Yeah. Well, now I understand why.
Yes. Yes. So she continues to fight the good fight, and she's fantastic, and look her up. Go learn more about her and read her
book.
Yes. Yeah. That's my advice to you, dear listeners.
Exactly.
Well, thank you again for joining us for another episode of Mystify, God's Saltiest Women, and thank you for listening to a very small piece of Lema Bowie's story. Mm-hmm. I do. Please, please, please go research her more, learn more about her. This was just a very brief look from one fangirl into the life of an incredible, phenomenal woman. So please do go check her out. Anything else to add, Gail?
Don't unclothe yourself in front of a man just to get your way, unless it's for war. That's my advice for the listeners.
You know, you gotta do what you gotta do, mm-hmm. and war is extreme circumstances, so
yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you all for listening. It's been a pleasure. Tune in next week. We'll have another great Mystifying Salty Woman to bring to you, our very last episode of this limited series. I know, we're only going through to the end of Lent. In fact, next episode's kind of like a bonus episode, because we were really only going to end here.
Yeah, you guys should be grateful.
We just couldn't stop. There are just too many great women to talk about. So,
and this one holds a very, very special place in my heart, so it will probably be longer.
I love it. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll catch you next time.